friends? Happy am I to be here with you. And I guess all of you are also happy to be in this congregation. When like-minded people who treasure the Dhamma, those who enjoy the Dhamma, when they get together, it's a joyful, pleasant gathering. Kalena Dhamma Sakaccha, says the Buddha, the discourse on blessings. When like-minded people, those who treasure the Dhamma, when they get together to discuss the Dhamma, it's a great blessing in the life. Dhamma is the path to happiness. It is the medicine for all the sufferings, miseries in the world. It is the path for the light. So you all got together here again to learn the Dhamma, to discuss the Dhamma, to have proper understanding about it, but again to put it into practice, to realize it. And as you all heard to the topic that we are going to discuss, why do we like samsara? Why do we like samsara? Do you like samsara? No? Can I have the hands of those who do not like samsara? Well, very good. You can immediately apply to renunciation, become monks and nuns. That's the way out. Fastest way. Well, friends, today we are going to discuss our human nature. The human conditions in this universe. First of all, we have to have proper understanding of the word samsara. This is a Pali term and also a Sanskrit term. What does it mean, samsara? Literally, it means wandering on. Wandering on, without ending. It also can be translated as cycle of existence. So when it is said cycle, it is repeated. So repeated birth and death, birth and death. This is what we call wandering. Going on without ending. Buddhists, we believe that this is not the first life we are living, and this is not the last life we are living. We have been born billions of times, and we will be born again and again and again. And Buddhists, we also believe that the earth is not the only place where life exists. There can be many other places in this universe where life can exist. We also believe that life can exist either in a gross level like human forms and animal forms, and life also can exist in subtler forms like divine beings and spirits, many other forms. Whatever it is, life is a combination of material and mental energies, whether it is subtle or gross level. Buddhism recognizes 31 realms of existence, and human realm is only one of them. This range, starting from miserable, gloomy realms until up to happy, exclusively happy, happy realms. So human realm is one of the happy realm, in lowest category in happy realm. But there are miserable realms. I think all of you know 31 realms of existence. We talk about 4 unhappy realms. And other than the 4 unhappy realms, all the other 27 realms are happy realms. So human realm is one of the happy realms. Well, sometimes people, they are so fascinated with the divine realms. And some people talk about going to divine realm, to be born as a divine being. And many religions, they in fact have got only one divine realm. Being a Buddhist, you have a choice. You have 27 26 divine realms. Be happy and proud about it. You can select, you can choose where to be born, what realms you want. Well, friends, whether it is divine or human or animal or whatever the realms, Buddhism again recognizes these realms are not permanent, eternal, subject to change and disappear. Life, whatever the forms that we live, it is still not perfect. So what is this circle of existence? One, we are human being. Another life, we are divine being. In another life, we are an animal, or maybe a hungry ghost, or somebody else, moving from one realm to another realm, without ending. We are cycling. We are going round and round and round. This is what we call samsara. Buddha says, the beginning and of this cycle, wandering cannot be seen. Anamata goyang bhikkhave sansaro pubba kotina panyayati. The starting point of this wandering cannot be seen. Why this cannot be seen? No matter to what extent you go to the past to find out the beginning, you will still find the possibility to go further and further and further. There are many similes Buddha has given. One of the very famous similes, I think I have repeated it a few times here. Maybe you remember. Once Buddha said in the discourse, suppose someone wants to find out his own lineage, and finding his own lineage, he goes backward to find his fathers, forefathers, great-grandfathers, so on and so forth. And he says, suppose he reduced this great earth into small clay balls and he keep one clay ball aside saying, this is my father. He keeps another one saying, this is my father's father. He keeps another one saying, this is my father's father's father. In this way, this man will go backward to the past to find out his own origin, lineage. And Buddha says, sooner or later, this great earth will be used up. But not the lineage of that man. Such is this wandering. And Buddha again says, in this cycle of existence, in this wandering on, we cannot say that this man or this woman did not become my father or mother in this long cycle of existence. We have become brothers and sisters, parents and children, many times in this cycle of existence. Again, Buddha says, we cannot point out any single place on this earth saying, under this place, in this place, nobody is buried. Such is this cycle of existence. This whole earth is a crematorium ground. So each and every place that we live, earlier people lived and died and their bodies are buried. And this Singapore is the best example, so understand this. Some of those cemetery grounds which were a few years back when I came to Singapore, now is housing complex. But people we do not know. Well, such is this wandering cycle of existence. And Buddha says, in this cycle of existence, wandering from realm to realm, we have experienced a lot of miseries, as well as joys. We are born to the world, and in this process of undergoing the birth, our mother, father, as well as the baby, undergo a lot of miseries, troubles, difficulties, pain. The moment we are born to the world is the moment that we are getting old. Moment by moment, we are getting old. And finally we reach very old age. We lose our eyesight. Our skin becomes wrinkled. Black hair turns into grey. We lose our teeth. We lose our hearing, we become very weak, feeble. the same time we enjoy a lot of pain and suffering because of diseases. It's unavoidable. Then finally death comes. But again, it's not the end. Then we will be born again. The cycle will be repeated again. The moment you are born and it starts getting old, then fall sick and die, and born again, and the cycle will be repeated. This is what we call wandering on, cycle of existence, samsara. In this process of moving from one realm to another realm, Buddha says, we have cried a lot, lamented a lot, shed a lot of tears and blood. When we lost our mother, when we lost our father, our loved ones, when we had to separate it from our loved ones, dear and near ones, we have cried a lot. If we allow someone to collect the tears, then the tears will be greater than the word of the great ocean, such a long time that you're wandering. And I said further, suppose monks, there were someone to collect the bones of a single person who is wandering thus. If someone collect the bones of a single person who is wandering thus, the bones will be greater than the great mountains on the earth, such a long time that you are wandering. So in this process of wandering in this cycle of existence, without understanding its beginning and end, motivated by our desire, because of craving, because of ignorance, and we are going round and round and round, this is called wandering on samsara. Well, here a question may arise. Well, if this wandering is such a miserable thing, and why do we like samsara? We still do not want to get rid of it. We still attached to it. And if you are not attached to it, straight away you have renounced and you are practicing diligently to get rid of it. We still have some form of attachment, this and that. Well, suppose a Buddha were to appear in front of you now, just now here. And he says, well, who wants to attain Nibbana? Many people will give the excuses. Venerable sir, can you please wait for a while? Let my daughter get married first, then after that I will come. Let my son find a, you know, good job and settle down. We have a lot of excuses. Oh, let me enjoy this or that. Such is our desire. Such is our attachment to this cycle of existence. This is a very inspiring but simple story in Buddhist texts. I think many of you have heard about it. Have you heard about a man who was chased by an elephant? No? Well, one day a man was traveling through a thick jungle, a forest. And this forest is full of thorns, full of various poisonous snakes, hills and slopes, and journey was very difficult. He was traveling through this thick forest with so much difficulties. All of a sudden, an elephant appeared, and he started chasing after this man. So this man got into his heels, and he started running for life. And when he was running for his life, he came across an abandoned well. And in despair, without finding a way, he wanted to go and hide in the well. But to his horror, he saw a python was at the bottom of this abandoned well. But still, no way to escape. So what did he do? He jumped to this well and managed to hold to a creeper, a thorny creeper. So now he was clinging, holding to this thorny creeper, and he was bleeding because it was thorny, and While he was hanging to this thorny creeper, he happened to see two mices. Mice or mouse? Well, one is a white one, the other one was a black one. They were gnawing it, cutting this the creeper. But when he looked above, there was a beautiful thing, pleasant thing also, a beehive. Occasionally, the honey drops from this beehive, trickle from it, and fell onto his face. So greedily he started licking the honey. Then when wise man, a compassionate man, happened to pass by this abandoned well and saw the pathetic situation this man is experiencing, and said, "Come on, I'll rescue you. I know the way how to get rid of this misery." What did this man say? "Wait, let me enjoy honey first." So this is the situation that we all are caught up. Well, this is a story to teach something. The elephant here is the symbol of the death. The moment that we are born to the world, onward, life is challenged by death. We do not know what time we will die. Life will end up with death. Remember it. It's not permanent. Like elephant is always chasing after us, death is always coming with us, finding an opportunity to attack. The path this man was traveling through, this thick jungle, was not a bed of roses like our life. A lot of difficulties, a lot of challenges we had to overcome. We had to undergo pain, suffering, miseries. We had to pay a lot. This is the path that we are traveling, life. And to his horror, he saw a python, the bottom of this well. At the end, what is that? What is at the end of our life? What is there for us waiting? Old age. Now still you are quite young. You will not understand what is sickness until we fall sick. We will not understand what is old age until we really get old. That is the nature of our life. So python is the symbol of old age and is waiting for us. And then this thorny creeper this man was holding is our life. It is the rebirth again, birth and death. Death is not the end. We will be born again and again and again. So this is our life. Then a white and black mice, they were cutting it out. White resemble the daytime. The black is night. Day and night pass by. Time is going. Life is spent. We do not know what time they will cut this string, this creeper. And this honey is the symbol of pleasure. Through our eye, through our nose, through our tongue, and through the body, and ears, through these five sense faculties, we are tasting honey. And we are attached to it. So the Buddha here is the wise man who came and said, "I can rescue you. I can show you the path." And he said, "Wait for a while. I want to taste honey first." This is the situation that you all are caught up. That is why we like samsara. We like samsara because of honey. And we forget the rest of the things. And this man is faced the death in three ways. The elephant is trying to kill him. Then, if he drop to the well, the python will kill him. Or if these mice manage to cut this thorny creeper, then still he will die. So the death is inevitable. But still we want to enjoy. We want to taste the honey. Why we like this samsara? Because of craving. The Buddha says, craving is such a powerful mental force, will not end up at the death. Uno loko atito tanha daso uno ahutvana jahanti dehaṁ kamehi lokam hinahi atti citti. The Buddha says, all the living beings, they are slow to craving. They always think not enough, not enough. Kamehi lokehi nahi atititi. Not a man was satisfied with gratifying sense faculties. At the moment of the death, too, we are not satisfied. Unava huttvana jahanti dehaṁ. Being unsatisfied, we die with so much desire at the moment. We want more and more and more. Then, we will come back. Because we want more. So craving is the cause of this wandering. Craving is the reason why we want to be. We like this cycle of existence. Well, this is the second noble truth Buddha talks about. The second noble truth, Buddha says, Yayan tanha puno bhavika tratta tatra binandini siyatidang kamatanha bhavatanha and vibhavatanha. It is because of this craving. It is because of this thirst that we are wandering from this life to next life, from next life to next life. And if this craving make you gratify here and now, and gratify you and somewhere else, clinging to this and that, we are looking for the enjoyment, the pleasure. And he divided it into three. Kama tanha, bhava tanha, and vibhava tanha. Let's understand these three. What is kama tanha? Kama tanha means desire for sense gratification. Every single human beings, as well as every other human beings, every single moment, they are looking after something. They are always looking forward, looking after satisfaction, looking for pleasure. We look for satisfaction through enjoying the pleasure. Your eye is waiting to see beautiful things. Your ear always wants to hear soothing things. Your nose likes to smell only pleasant smells. Your touch is waiting you to feel it with tasty foods. And your body is always looking for comfort to gratify. Through our eye, ear, nose, tongue and body, you are looking for the agreeable, pleasurable, pleasant, light, sound, smells, taste and touch sensations. And this is what we call pleasure. This is what we call happiness. This is what we call sense gratification. Remember, Buddha is never against sense gratification. So you should not misunderstand him. Or you should not misinterpret him, say, like some other people. Buddha is never against for you to gratify your sense faculties. But he warns you, do not indulge yourself and become forgetful. And do not become ignorant. Sense gratification is not only the purpose in life. But you have to work hard for your salvation to get rid of this cycle of existence. If you indulge yourself being ignorant, then there's no end for this round of birth and death. So Buddha never again sense gratification, but he warns out the warn us to be mindful. So friends, From the birth to death, we all the human beings and the other living beings, we are looking for satisfactions. We are looking for happiness through sense gratifications. No one is perfectly happy. One day, Buddha was going with a group of monks through a forest. And he came across a wild dog, a jackal. This jackal was having a skin problem. And this jackal sit for a while and he is not comfortable, then run here and there, come back, it's not comfortable. Lie down, it's still not comfortable, and rolling on the ground is still not comfortable because of itchiness. And Buddha showed this jackal to the monks and said, "Monks, human beings are also like this jackal. Why? They achieve one thing, then they are happy for a moment, then they are unhappy again. They want to achieve something else. They achieve something else, then they are bored with it and they want to be happy again. They achieve something else. Once you gratify your eye, then once you are bored of it, then you want to look for something else. So in this way life is going on, time is passing, and we are coming to the old age and death. Then it is not the end again. Repeating again and again and again. This is how we are wandering. That is how we are going on. At the moment of the death also, we are not perfectly satisfied. We still have so much craving in our mind. So, we will be coming back. That is what we call bhava tanha. Buddha says, craving for existence. We have so much craving in our mind to be born again and again and again. When you do meritorious activities, we have a lot of wishes. I want to be born in a rich family. I want to be born in this divine realm or that divine realm. I want to be like this, like that. We have a lot of wishes in our life. This is called bhava tanha. The craving for repeated becoming again and again and again. We want to achieve in next life what we cannot achieve here and now. We are getting old, but no one wants to get old. So we want to be young forever. And we are falling sick. And we don't want to fall sick. We want to be healthy forever. Then we will die. But we do not want to die. We want to live forever. One life is not enough. We want more lives. But impossible to have many in this human form, even though some manage, then we want to have more. So this desire of man's mind, how to fulfill? There is an option. What is the option? Believe me, after the death, you will be born in the heaven. Then heaven will be the eternal place. Eternal. There is no old age, there is no sickness, there is no death. You will be having all the things that you want in your life, a lot of beauty queens around you. And when you believe it, you are ready to die because you want to be born immediately. So you will go and explore yourself and kill yourself with many other living beings. Possible. This is the human nature, and this is what we believe, and this is what we want. So what we cannot achieve in this life, we want to achieve in our next life. So we will come back again and again and again. Bhava tanha. Then Buddha says again, not only the bhava tanha, there is another form of it. Vibhava tanha. Vibhava tanha is totally opposite to this desire. Those people who think it is because of this body that I am suffering. I'm having all these problems in my family, I'm having all these health problems because of this body. Some people who are having incurable disease, undergoing so much pain and suffering, they want to kill themselves. Some people who are having a lot of family problems, economic problems, and social problems, they think it is because I'm living, so I want to kill myself. So, death, if killing oneself, suicide, it is not the solution to the problems. Buddha says this is vibhava tanha. And you have so much desire to destroy yourself because you expect something else. So those people who die, they kill themselves, they still have a form of craving. So these are the three forms of craving which make us bound to this cycle of existence. It is because of these three types of craving that you are wandering from life to life, from birth to death and back to birth to death in this way. Well, when it comes to this cycle of existence, Buddha says to a group of monks one day, Tinimani vikkave sankatasya sankata lakkhanani katamani tini uppado panyayati vayo panyayati titasanya tattam panyayati. He says, monks, in this cycle of existence, in this wandering on, the sankatasya sankata lakkhanani, this word sankata has got a deeper and broader meaning which cannot be translated into English with one single word. Sankata means combined together, connected together, composed together. This word sankata is a broader term. It can include everything and anything in this universe. Whether living or unliving, whether material or immaterial, anything in this universe can be included to the word sankata. Sankata means combined together, compounded, synthesis, or processing. This is what we mean the word sankata. So human being is sankata. Sankata means combinations. Human being is a combination of forces and energies. And basically, in Buddhism we recognize five types of energies, five aggregates. And this mic that I'm holding is combination of forces and energies. This building itself, combinations of forces and energies. Whatever you come across through your eye, through your ear, nose, tongue, body, outside world, all these are conditioned things. The planets, the earth, the human beings, animals, flora and fauna, and everything else. Everything else is conditioned. This is called sankata. We ourselves conditions. So Buddha says, this conditioned things, cycle of existence itself is conditioned by our mind. So what we need is to uncondition it. So unconditioned nature of the mind is known as asankata, unconditioned. What is unconditioned? It's nibbana. So everything is conditioned. What is unconditioned is nibbana. So that is why Mahayana, great Mahayana scholars, sansara and nibbana is within this. There's no difference between sansara and nibbana. There's one Mahayana scholar monk who said this. There's no difference between sansara and nibbana. It has got a deeper meaning. He does not mean such a simple way, and some people criticize his statement. In fact, he's a philosopher. This is what he means. So, Buddha says, sankatasya sankata lakkhanani. In this cycle of existence, whatever the conditioned things, they have got these three characteristics. Uppado panyayati. Things arise into the world. Then, titasanya tattam panyayati. Whatever arises into the world has got the nature of surviving. Then, vayo panyayati. Whatever arose, survive and disappear. Uppada, titi, banga. Birth, live and death. great civilizations have arisen in the world. They have survived a period of time, then after that they disappeared. Great scholars, great men, politicians, emperors, they have arisen in the world, born to the world, they lived for a period of time, then they died. Human beings, other animals and living beings, they are born to the world, they live and they die. A flower that blooms in the morning will survive, then in the evening it fades away. The tiny plants arise from the tiny seeds and become a huge tree, and that will fall upon the earth one day. Nothing is permanent. Everything is subject to change and disappear. This is the nature of this cycle of existence. The moment we cling to this is the moment we create suffering. So the Buddha says the samsara, this wandering on, is dukkha. But here, this time, we should not misunderstand again. Dukkha is loosely translated as suffering. But dukkha means a very broader and deeper sense that is unsatisfactory. Not worthy to cling. Not worthy to attach. It is unsatisfactory. Happiness and unhappiness both are inside the word dukkha. So friends, when Buddha says life is dukkha and we should not misunderstand there is no happiness, what he means, this so-called happiness that you cling with so much desire is not a worthy one. Why? It's subject to change and disappear, not permanent, number one. Number two, this thing that you call happiness now can change into unhappiness. You consider your boyfriend or girlfriend or your husband or wife is a treasure for you, give you so much happiness in your life. So you cling. But if your girlfriend or boyfriend or wife or husband does not behave as you want, the same boyfriend and girlfriend bring you a lot of headache, miseries. Your son or daughter that you treasure so much can give you unhappiness too. And when you are outside, when it is very hot, you think aircon room will be a very ideal place. You come here and you feel, you know, pleasure, you enjoy it. But after a period of time, it is too cold now. So same thing that you consider earlier as happiness can change into unhappiness. So this is changing. Whatever we consider as happiness can change into unhappiness. That is why it is not worthy to cling. Again, why this so-called pleasure and happiness not worthy from the Buddha's own word? Because it cannot give you perfect satisfaction. The desire is like fire. Whatever it comes across, it will burn. And we have enjoyed a lot in our life. We have gratified our sense faculties a lot. But do you think it's enough? How much is enough for you? It is not enough. And whatever the amount that you get, whatever the amount that you make your sense faculties gratify, is still not enough. We still want. So this is what Buddha means, the word dukkha. He did not mean that there is no happiness when he said life is dukkha. So we should not misinterpret him. We should not create misconception regarding this word dukkha. So friends, this is the nature of this cycle of existence. So having said so, Buddha says, well, regarding this samsara, you have to realize it in three successive stages. First stage, he says, asada. Asada means enjoyment. See Buddha's approach, it's very, what is it called? He doesn't approach it in a miserable way. He says, look at the pleasant side of your life. Asad, enjoyment. There is much to enjoy in your life. Gratify your eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, enjoying. This is called asad, enjoy. Then Buddha says, but do not be ignorant. Look at the other side also. What is the other side? Adina. Not only enjoyment in life, there is a miserable side also. Not only pleasure, there is unhappiness, sorrow, lamentation, pain also. To enjoy, you have to suffer a lot also. So this is called Adinava. Then Buddha gave us a solution. Give us a freedom to think. Now, you think, in one side you have got enjoyment, the other side you have got the opposite side of its Adinava, its miseries. Then, if you understand, if you realize these miseries are greater than the enjoyment, if you understand it is not worthy to cling to this enjoyment because of this much of enjoyment, I have to suffer that much of suffering, then for those wise people, Buddha gave the third solution. What is that? Escape. Nissarana. Freedom from both. Then you are free from this cycle of existence. You are free from this prison of existence. So that is the approach of the Buddha. So Buddha never says that each and every one of you should become at once monks and nuns and practice meditation and attain Nibbana. Buddha understood and he said, Appakate manusyesu ye janaparagamino atayang itarapajatira mevanujdhavati. Not many human beings will at once realize this perfect truth. It need time. It need practice. So he cared for all the human beings. And he teach the Dhamma for each and every human beings to practice, to be happy in this life itself. It means Ditta Dhamma Hita Sukha. Buddha teach the Dhamma for the happiness of the mankind who are living here and now, for the happiness of this life. Then Buddha also teach the Dhamma Samparayaka Hita Sukha, for the happiness of your next life. Means, in this cycle of existence, you can be born in happy places. He gives some instructions. Sabba Papa Sakarana, do not do evil, wicked things. Why? You will be born in miserable lower realms. Do good things. Pleasurable, favorable realms are there for you to be born by doing meritorious deeds. Then he gives the third solution for wise people. He said, that is Paramattha Hita Sukha. Those who understand the enjoyment and its consequences, and those who are ready, and there is a way out of it. Sachitta Pariyodhapana. Cultivate, purify your mind. Noble Eightfold Path is the path for it. So this Noble Eightfold Path, eight factors that we come across this Noble Eightfold Path, it is to train your thoughts, words and actions to become noble individuals, noble human beings. When this path is followed by wicked human beings, they will end up by being compassionate human beings. When ignorant human beings start practicing this path, they will become wise human beings. When ordinary human beings start following this path, they will become extraordinary human beings. This is the path that leads from miseries to happiness, to cessation of suffering, to the peace, to become perfectly enlightened human being. So I think this much is enough as a talk. So if you have got any questions, we will spend a little bit of time for Q&A.
Shall we say sadhu for the very uplifting talk? Saru, sadhu, sadhu. So now it's questions from the floor. I think since I'm holding the mic, I got the first priority. But it's not that we want to, like we, in fact we do not like samsara, but however, enlightenment is too far away. Do we have something in between? As I understand from the Mahayana tradition, we understand there is a pure land so long as you have this faith in the Amitabha Buddha, and during your time of death, you have this one pointedness thinking of Amitabha, you are at the pure land. And then from there, you practice somehow and to be enlightened. But in the Theravada traditions, do we have such a kind of in-between?
Of course, we have the most original pure land. And you all have a little bit changed it. but of course we don't mind it. In original teaching, the pure land is known as Suddhavasa. The Pali term is given Suddhavasa. I told you in cycle of existence, we have 31 realms of existence. Suddhavasa is one of the fine material realm. There are 16 fine material realms, 4 formless realms, 4 unhappy realms, and 7 happy realms, including divine realms. Altogether 31 realms of them. So among these 16 fine material realms, Suddhavasa is the 16th one, the most happiest realm. And it is exclusively reserved for a group of people. What is group of people? They are the ones who achieve third level of sainthood. Those who practice diligently achieved the third level of the sainthood. They are the ones who exclusively have the key to this realm. They are the ones who will be born there, and they will attain enlightenment, perfect enlightenment there, and they will attain Nibbana. So it is not in fact a new concept. It is in original teachings. What is new here is the Buddha Amitabha concept is the new one. I'm not going to talk about it. Well, I mean the word Buddha can be used for enlightened one in broader sense. Buddha comes from the word Buddhi. So, in Theravada traditions, we recognize 3 types of Buddhas. Sammasambuddha, Paccheka Buddha, and Arahanta Buddha. They all are given the term Buddha. But of course, in popular sense, in supreme sense, when we use the word Buddha, we mean the supremely enlightened, this incomparable, unique human being. But for the others who are enlightened also, can be used the word Buddha. So in that sense, we still do not have any disagreement and confrontation with our Mahayana brothers. Unity in diversity is still very harmonious. We do not have any argument about it. So it is alright. As I told you, yes, Buddha teach the Dhamma for the good and happiness of this life itself. He teach us a lot how to be happy here and now. Buddha has given a lot of instructions, a lot of teachings, how to become rich, how to earn in a righteous way, how to spend in a meaningful way, how to lead a happy married life, how to lead a happy family life, how to take care of one another in a society, how to establish righteous governments, how should kings and ministers should govern a country, how to achieve the economic stability, political stability in a country, and how to achieve both material and spiritual happiness, how to be happy. This is Ditta Dhamma Hitta Sukha, means happiness here and now. Buddha teach for it. And Buddha also teach Samparayaka Hitta Sukha, how to achieve happiness after the death, to be born in a pleasurable, favorable realm. And not only that, he also teach us how to achieve perfect happiness, Nibbana. That is, Paramattha Hitta Sukha. Buddhism is all about happiness. It is a message of happiness. It is agenda to become happy. So, we should not say and should not misinterpret saying that Nibbana is the only goal. Nibbana, no doubt, no any argument, it is the last goal of all the Buddhists, monks, nuns and lay followers. That is our last goal. But before that there can be many interim goals. To lead a happy married life can be one goal. Become a good father or mother is another goal. Become a successful businessman is another goal. To be born in a heavenly realm is another goal. What's wrong of it? Buddha never said these are wrong goals. But one thing he says, this path is anupubba patipada anupubba kiriya. It's a gradual path. Have to develop step by step by step. So it is a path for all of us to train our thoughts, to train our words, to train our actions, to become perfectly enlightened human beings one day. So in this process of cycle of existence, there are many interim goals. And we should not misunderstand and misinterpret like some other people saying, Buddhism is only for the monks and nuns and for the those who renounce. This is a misconcept.
Thank you very much for the very good answer. Any other questions from the floor? Before we wait, yeah, this one over there.
Venerable Ratnasara, my question is relating to the practice of Qingming, which is going on now, where you clear your ancestors' grave and give offerings. If we are reborn all the time in the 31 realms, how will the practice of Qingming help our ancestors if they are already reborn in a different realm? The only way I can see that it benefits if they are born in the hungry ghost realm, where they share the merits. If they are in the heavenly realms or reborn as a human, how does the practice actually help them? Thank you.
How can Qingming practice be helpful to those who are dead and gone? In the first place, it is helpful for yourself. Why? You take the opportunity to do merits. It is the time for you to do something good, do something meritorious. Merits are needed for each and every one of us. Merit is the base for happy life here and now. Merit is the base for happy life here after the next. Ibhanandati, Pichanandati. Those who do merits, they are happy here and now and happy here after the next. So when you in this period do a meritorious action in the name of your mother or father or loved ones or whoever, in the first place, you will be benefited. Why? You take the opportunity to do merits. What is merits? Chittam punati iti punyam. Happiness over good actions through your thoughts, words and physical actions. When you do these good actions, you are happy, you produce merits. So you are the number one who will be benefited. Number two, again, you get the opportunity to pay your tribute, pay your respect to your departed loved ones. You still remember your beloved mother, still remember your beloved father. They help you a lot, gave you the life, brought you up. You are a grateful son and daughter. Even though father is dead and gone, fatherhood remains forever. Even though mother is dead and gone, motherhood remains forever. The dear memories are still fresh in our mind. And we are grateful sons and daughters to remember their great service they rendered towards us. They are the first teachers in our life. They are the protective gods in our life. So, we do these things in honor, out of respect, having a lot of thoughts of gratitude. This is a noble quality again to develop yourself. Why? Buddhism is a practice to train our thoughts, words and actions. We are developing a lot of virtuous qualities, Buddha nature, the Bodhisattva nature. Number three, you are putting yourself an example to your children. If you want your child to take care of you when you are old, please take care of your mother and father. Because then your child will see, my father is taking care of his father and mother. The children will learn these things. Mother and father should put examples. I mean, they should behave in that way. So this is a way to train your children to take care of one's mother and father, to pay respect to your great-grandfathers and mothers. That is very beneficial. And in human society, we have to have the relationship based on loving kindness, compassion, goodwill, gratitude and understanding. When we lose all these things, we will become machines. That is what is happening in materialistic societies. We are clever than the computers and machines and robots, but then we become another type of machines, not human beings. So when we lose our human values, we are no more than a machine, a robot. Do we want it? So if you do not want it, this is again another practice. Chambing has got that quality. And to our answer to the direct questions, whether departed ones can share their merits if they are born in some other realm, already born. Well, merits can be shared with the living ones. Merits can be shared with the departed ones. But there are conditions. Those who are born in suffering realm, miserable realms, because of their powerful negative karmic energy, remember, we cannot share the merits with them. It is impossible. Why? Their negative, unwholesome karmic energy is so powerful, and our positive energy cannot transfer there. It's not compatible. It doesn't travel there. It is like you are in a place where there is no the receptions, and somebody else is trying to call you, and the other person cannot get you because simply there is no receptions, because they are in such kind of realms where negative realms and positive energy cannot be traversed and cannot be shared. And there are beings in favorable situations where merits can be shared, like divine beings and some form of beings who are in subtle-level astral bodies. There are four conditions in order to share the merits to be completed. Number one, you have to have a pure mind, positively conditioned mind. Number two, you have to do something good, meritorious. Number three, you have to radiate your thoughts. It means having a pure mind, having done something good, then you think, my beloved mother, my beloved father, wherever you are, may you be well, may you be happy. This is radiating your own thoughts. Thought has got so much power. Thoughts can overcome the time and the barriers of time and space. Human mind, when it is powerful, it can be radiated itself. So transference of merits mean transference of energies, human thoughts. So at this moment, when you transfer merits, having pure mind, having done something good, and your mind becomes powerful, luminous, and it can project itself. Fourth step is, when you share the merits, the other party should rejoice over the merits, the departed ones. When you give something, the other party should receive it. When I call you, you should pick up the call in order to complete the communication. Exactly in the same manner, the other party, when they rejoice over the merits, then only the transference of merits is completed. So, some of our departed ones may be in a possible pleasurable realms where they can receive the merits and enjoy the merits. Some of them may be in places where they cannot receive merits at all because of their negative powerful karmic energy. But assuming our departed ones can receive the merits, we do merits and share the merits. Suppose if they are in a negative realm where they cannot receive the merits, then what will happen to the merits? Well, it is yours. Merit is a positive energy. Merit is a positive energy. Again, among the Buddhists, there can be some misconceptions, like when you share the merits, my merits are gone. So some people, they don't want to share the merits. In fact, that's very, very wrong, and not according to the teachings of the Buddha. Remember, among 10 meritorious deeds, Buddha gives one meritorious deed called Pattidana, means sharing the merit itself is a meritorious deed. Why? When you share the merits, your merits will increase. I give you a simile to understand this. Suppose you light up an oil lamp, and this oil lamp dispels the darkness. Am I right to say that? Yes. Exactly the same manner, when you do something good, something meritorious, something pleasant, then you light up your mind. Your mind becomes happy. When your mind becomes happy, dark, gloomy, miserable thoughts of your mind disappear. You become so pleasant, so bright, having done something good honestly. You are like a light now. Now, what are you going to do? You are going to share the merits with the others. It is like I take another oil lamp and light it up using the former light. Because of this, do you think the light of the former lamp will go off or reduce? Yes or no? No. Then what will happen in contrary? Light will grow. It will grow exactly in the same manner. Because of my positive energy, I will light up your positive energy. That is sharing the merits. That is what we call sharing the merits. In olden days, I do not know whether it's still practiced here. Sometimes in cars, when we do not have enough battery power, we use a cable to plug into from one battery to another one to start the car. Do you practice it sometimes? Yes, it is to give some energy. So this is giving some energy, sharing the energy. And as a result, we can start both cars and we can recharge it again. This is what we call sharing the merits. And it has nothing to do with the bound belief or superstitious practices. It is something scientific, something rational, something that we can understand scientifically. And Buddha says, Naham bhikkhu eka dhammang samanupassami yata idam cittam. Monks, I do not see any other kind of power, any other kind of energy which can overcome the power of the human mind. So, human mind, when it is powerful, when it is energetic, it can be transferred itself, it can be projected itself. That is what we call sharing the merits.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And in view of the AGM, we got to stop here, and then please stay back for the AGM. We start at 1 o'clock.